coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Things that should never be said on podcasts. It's coming. Ladies and gentlemen, now is the time for reflection. You have found Hey Kids Comics in its 200th iteration. Thank you guys so much. Well, I'm thinking, by the way, those are the dulcet tones of the Jedi Cole Houston, co-host of Hey Kids Comics and producer. I am Andrew Farmer, the co-host, of Hey Kids Comics and, researchtorian. That's what I'm going to call it. That's official.
I thought you were on the verge of calling it research.
I'm a man of letters. That's what I'll be, Hey Kids Comics, man of letters. Yeah, so...
Wasn't that one of the Batman-appropriated man of letters?
He was the worst, too. It was like Cypher from the New Mutants. You're like, yeah, I mean, you really...
That was the Native American Cypher.
Yeah, like, you really have a very useful power, but you can't use it to fight Ahab. But you've literally solved all the world's problems by making communication from everyone across the globe possible, but
that's
we
right.
Can't use you because you can't turn into a giant cannonball or...
But you'll be very popular in the manga section.
My favorite thing that they did...
Translating.
None of this has anything to do with the show we're going to do, but my favorite thing that they did with Cypher...
Well, we've done 199 shows, so we'll let our hair down.
Yeah, we can tangentialize a little bit, is the X-Men Asgardian Wars.
Yes, I remember very well that Cypher got to finally step up.
Yeah, because he could translate all of the Eld, A-U-L-D, Asgardian scrolls and things like that. So he became the kind of hero of the book at the end.
Truly became man of
letters. He became man of letters. But yes, you have found us in the two...
Not to be confused with man of letters.
That's man. That's like man
like,
of lettuce.
He's like a low rent swing.
It's like Man of War, but like man of lettuce.
Yeah, lettuce. He was like a kind of rural hero. stopped a lot of pesticide moguls, things like that.
His alter his arch nemesis was Hydro Pontius Pilate.
Hydro Pontius Pilate. Wow,
that's how we're going to start. That's how we're going to start. But yes, thank you, first of all, everyone. This is the 200th issue. When we started this thing, we never thought in a million years that we would get to 200, that we would have the tenacity or the audacity to continue, but you guys made it possible. You guys wanted more.
Well, you know, 100 issues ago, they were aghast.
We were.
We were agog, we're aghast.
We were.
To paraphrase Les Miserables. But not because Marius was in love at last. And we had never seen him ooh and awe. But more that we were just in awe of the fact that somehow we had rattled out 100 issues of this show, and now 100 issues later... I just am beside myself. 101 issue, because number 6 was broken into parts, plus 2 annuals and 2 crossover specials. What'd you think?
Right.
For 205 this series.
That's amazing. Like, I can't. I look back now on where and when we were when we started this thing, and we've come so far. You know, as podcasters and as readers and lovers of the medium, like, this has informed the way I read comics. This has informed the way I appreciate art. This has informed the way I appreciate narrative and, you know, how it's built and storytelling and oral tradition and history. And it's I hope it's done some of the same for everyone out there. You know, like we always say, what we're the goal of doing this for an hour a week is to change your relationship with comic books. We don't, you know, we're not trying to convince you to love comic books. We think you already do. It's to change the way you look at them and read them. And
yes,
view.
Indeed. It was either that or Incredible Morbiosity brought you first place. So.
And we appreciate that more than you know.
Tap because as curiosity goes, we prefer the morbid, because standard run-of-the-mill curiosity is not nearly as curious as morbid curiosity.
And as we move into a new age of Hey Kids comics, Cole came up with a very curious idea that the more that I think we thought about it and wrapped our heads around it, the more accurate it was. And on the topic of a new age of Hey Kids comics, way back 10 weeks ago, I said I was going to have an announcement on this show. And you know, without it being Grant Morrison-like and self-serving, this show has grown beyond it's become greater than the sum of its parts. When the show started, you know, Cole was going to produce and co-host the show, and I was going to host the show. And as the 200 issues of the show progressed, if you've listened, it's grown past that. So on our 200th issue of Hey Kids Comics, I would like to officially dissolve the host-co-host relationship and just come at you as your hosts, the Jedi Cole Houston and Andrew Farmer. There's no need to stand on that ceremony.
So we are firestorming.
We have been firestorming it for 100 issues of the show, Cole. I'm still not 100% sure we're not the same person.
Andy, I know. I think you're like that portion of me that was unborn for about 50 or so.
I'm the portion you ate in the womb? Is that what you're trying to say?
And once I digested it, and it entered the ethereal plane.
Jesus.
And became you.
But yes, so
also sprinkled stardust in her eyes.
The age of your hosts has begun. And also, Cole, is there another age that we're talking about tonight?
The age of this host is showing well as I turn 51.
Hey, you don't look a day over 49.
I know.
Pal, you look great. You look great, kid.
I'd be better if I'm more.
You've hit the 0 point energy stratus of the Benjamin Button's disease. You're right there in the middle. Can't tell whether you're coming or going. Don't know where Cole starts and Cole stops anymore.
Yeah, that's the best part. Like, the denizens of Orko, we're glacier.
So what are we officially talking tonight on the 200th issue of Hey Kids Comics?
This is the 200th issue, Tales from the Tanzanite Age. And this is hard back to a show that I am desperately trying to remember which issues direct folks back that way.
If we have any historians out there, please remind us.
You recall, you know, where we've been. But the Tanzanite Age was a term that I coined because we were kind of taking a little jolly jab at our good friend Rick Gutierrez from over at Rediscovering the Magic about how as we got more and more superhero movies, you know, on the horizon or behind us and what have you, over the last several years, it seemed like every time we turned around, another, you know, next year is just yet another golden age.
Used to make you so mad. You used to get so angry.
Enough with golden age, the golden arches of golden age. It very much reminded me of Tom Baker episode of Doctor Who. They arrived on this planet. There were like gemstones everywhere. Yeah. So I told him, yes, every now and then, every so often, Captain Clare's another golden age. Felt like, well, we are another golden age of prosperity upon us again. And it takes a lot of the luster out of golden age when there's so damn many of them.
Right.
So I determined that we needed something more unique, something very highly specialized. Of course, you know, natural first instinct is, why not platinum? Isn't that where you all want to head? You had gold platinum. The only way you get a better than Olympic level is to go all platinum on. But that wasn't for me either. I wanted something very targeted, something that was unique. And I zeroed in on Tanzan. Well, not a rare gemstone. It is unique to basically a mining field near Mount Kilimanjaro, African nation, Tanzania. It turns out, like Dippers or somebody, coined term Tanzan. But it's a gem that only occurs in one place in the world.
It's the shittiest vibranium.
Oh, yeah. It's like vibranium vein. It's like, you know, Bonfire of the Vanities vibranium. And I thought that therein lies unique sourcing. This is the Tanzanite.
Now, my question for you off of on Jump Street, because you've put a lot more thought into the idea of the Tanzanite Age and as a definition, is this what because this is a comic book podcast, right?
Oh, yes.
Is this coming out of the modern age? Like, are we moving from the modern age to the Tanzanite Age, or is this kind of running concurrent with the modern age of comics?
This is the Tanzanite age of the comic movie.
Okay.
Comic movie can be broken down because its ages are much more rapid. It's kind of like Saturn, one of the planets in our solar system, where a single day is about equivalent 1 year here because it's so damn slow. So therefore, you have to apply a different sense of time, just relatively speaking. So comic books have been around for over 100 years. The comic book movie, apart from the really just bizarre, there's like an old Edison, which... Later, the character was revived. He's sort of like the Captain America of Muggerville.
Sure.
They actually found Edison Man buried in a rock formation.
Did they?
Yeah.
Why not? That's where they found him.
That's where they found him. That's the story. Yeah. He may have actually just been a drunk old fool on a rock pile. We're not sure which. But, you know, it's Muggerville, so you kind of have to take him at his word.
There's no history in Muggerville.
Yeah. But apart from Edison Man, which very obscure superhero character, predating even the comic book itself, you know, there haven't been comic movies. I guess arguably the earliest would have been serialized Saturday morning Batman Captain America series.
Right. You had, well, I mean, the real early ones were, you know, your Adventures of Superman, the Steve Reeves stuff in 50, you know, like in the mid-50s, the Lone Ranger stuff, the Zorro stuff, you know, that.
Exactly. And those kind of count as, they're almost like the history. They're like the cave paintings of the
year. Yeah, for sure.
So you really start to count the ages of the superhero after such a place, the superhero becomes popularized beyond just being effectively Saturday Fair for the kiddies.
Right.
And that's the point. You start to see the superhero rise of the superhero. And unlike a lot of things, like, you know, a lot of ages are considered golden ages of man, or there was kind of a reverse order to it. So you start out with the Dark Ages.
Okay, so, we're going deep. This is deep track.
Yeah, deep track here, because bear with have kind of a Bronze Age, which would be black and white serials, which would be early television, Superman, by far getting greatest foothold.
Sure.
And then cinematic, they hit the Dark Ages. You actually, the Visigoths come in the form of ill-advised film producers.
Right.
And could have been this glorious, could have been like the Colossus of or something. They just kind of melted all down and into money.
It's like the Medici almost, you know, like... Yes. Like in the Renaissance, like, dance for me, boy, paint things.
Yeah, you basically have the invaders come, take all of culture and art, and melt it down in its basis, and then peddle to masses. So the Dark Ages are when you first begin to achieve potential of a cinematic comic. So that's what get Dolph Lund Punishers.
Oh, is that the Dark Ages? Okay.
Oh, yes, very much so. Because this is the point, it's tremendous potential that is...
Well, but I can argue that, right? And I have a big argument later once we really get into this. But my argument for that is the potential isn't necessarily pissed away as much as it is, you know, someone was trying to use the Philosopher's Stone very early on in the basement of their castle in Latveria to create to take a concept and make it marketable. And I think that those people were people like us. It was like the one nerd at Paramount at the time, the one real nerd that was like, I think...
Yeah, was higher up, yes, high enough to get some sign off.
Right.
But
that could
not
affect,
high enough get what they might have.
Yeah, that could affect the change, but couldn't get the budget or to really sell it. But if they could just get the foot in the door, and then they got the script done, and then the script went back to the studio, and they're like, no, this isn't, why don't we have him not wear the shirt with the Punisher logo on it,
yeah.
And then we're gonna have this weird doctor in red high-heeled pumps for no apparent reason in the sewer. Like, what? That isn't...
Yeah, that's where you get Jewler in the Fantastic Four, that thank God the theatrical release, or that for some inexplicable reason, a Red Skull has to be Italian.
There's a very explicable reason for that. Those movies were awful, and I'll watch them 1,000 times.
But you have to have that Red Skull. He did keep the his top secret Meg weapon on top.
Damn it. But yeah, no, you're right. Okay, so continue. We're in the Dark Ages. We've
Which
got...
made him very attractive, haven't you?
We've got...
We had pictures of Red Skull with a big throwback, a special rip-off, no prize, if you know what the issue that was from.
And we've got... Damn it. But yeah, so we've got stuff like my favorite of all time, the Nick Fury made-for-TV David Hasselhoff movie. And, you know, people are really kind of testing the water at this point.
Exactly, or you get the what's the other made TV? You get the abortive Doctor Strange.
Are you talking about Doctor Strange TV show?
Yeah, they came like Unusual PhD or whatever it was.
Unusual PhD. No, it was.
I can't remember what it was. Name.
Unusual PhD might be my favorite name for a fake show ever. no, you're talking about Dr. Mordred. That Dark Moon got their hands on, which is one of the best. By the way, we're talking about movies, so side note. Do you know the story of Dr. Mordred?
I remember seeing like images for Dr. Strange, the Dr. Strange.
Yeah, so what happened was Dark Moon movies, like Dark Moon, who make what was the toys, the puppeteer movies? The awful.
Oh, about the Full Moon.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Full Moon got their hands.
Charles Band.
Got their hands on the rights to do Doctor Strange from Marvel, so they made a Doctor Strange movie, full on mid 80s Doctor Strange movie. Made it completely. Completely had it made. Marvel watched it and said, "Oh no, you can't. You're not allowed to do this." Oh no! So they pulled the rights for them to do it. So instead of just saying, you know, trashing the movie completely, Full Moon went in and just changed all the references to Doctor Strange to Dr. Mordred and released the damn thing. So it still got the Eye of Agamotto, the levitation cloak, everything. Jeffrey Rush is playing Doctor Strange / Doctor, like the guy from The Reanimator. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's out on Blu-ray. You can buy it.
I did to look into. Actually, I'm aware of it. I remember seeing pictures in Starlog, and I think that Stuart Gamore did, amongst other things, Chewbacca's originally, you know, designed Chewbacca, designed Yoda. Was Hale is Mike makeup?
It was great. But that's all. Okay, so tangent aside.
Yes,
if you
that was, but that's a good example of the Dark Age.
Right.
That was the bit where, again, Starlog, believe us, where the director of The Punisher is quoted in my version quite gleefully as saying, "We decided not to give him costumes. That'd be too much like a comic."
Yeah.
And to some degree, still suffer mentality.
We very much are.
Very heavily, little by little, we're coming in Hollywood less and less brave. Oddly enough, Superman was pretty much the first comic character where producers were terrified of him having a costume.
Right.
Because prior to Superman Lives, there was some reverence that part of costume design. Who realized it just comes down now to a matter of choice of material. More so than, you know, the specific... putting your own personal stamp on, just urinate on it, as it were, to market yours. So there's a reason that I classify as a scholar and man of letters the Dark Age in this way, because you have to have a Dark Age to have a Renaissance.
Yes, to become enlightened.
Yes, and you reach that age of enlightenment, because what happens is very much like Europe, where, you know, ancestry white boys like us were, you know, scratching on animal skins and discovered the Near East. In the Middle East, where they had hot, cold, run water, utensils, and courses and meals and architecture, didn't know how to make, and came back to Europe and said, like, you know, knuckle-dragging primitives. In comparison to the rest of the world, we just step up, and people said, "Hey, here's an idea. Scholarship. Let's go out and learn things."
Yes.
And I think that that's ultimately what happens, is you have this sort of emergence from... The problem wasn't that the comic book genre is unsellable. It's the horror comic genre, the one you're putting forward at this stage, Holly, in your adorable adorability. you know, once you outgrew that, you began to explore what... It wasn't that people didn't want this, it's just they didn't want this.
Right, right.
They wanted something. You know, it's like there's a reason that a lot of European, like, you know, Dickie Beer, who we got to meet in Finicon, was somebody asking about traveling to Netherlands and where to eat. Explain that you don't want to go to the Netherlands.
It's like just, that's not.
There's a reason that we have embraced everyone else's. Because it's like all potato-y and bland.
It's very, very starchy. It's a very starchy food.
So we left the starchy, it becomes very much like any sort of cultural evolution. The better you get, the better you want to get.
Right. You will always live just outside your means.
Yes. So we then begin, two things happen. There is a shift in attitude in Hollywood that was overdue. And film technology caught up the ambition of the film.
Right.
And, you know, 15 years ago, probably about 20 years ago, I actually told somebody we are reaching the point where technology has caught up to the superhero. And now that we're here, we're feeling those growing pains.
Yeah.
We're trying to find ourselves. And that's where we is this period of discovery. So as you're coming out of Dark Ages, then you begin to get into this, what could only really be called a kind of micro-science, because it doesn't hit. It's not a full war, just dead on, everything's coming up perfection.
Correct.
But you're getting there, starting to see an attitude in Hollywood that if we want to do something other than just break even or make some money after, and part of that was something unique, and that was the aftermath film, home video.
Right.
It's easy to forget the impact video had on everything Hollywood. Its initial impact was suddenly, you know, stuff's worth keeping.
Right.
We actually have always had like little gold mines at our disposal. And that's why early home video and early into every carnation, everything the catalyst converted from VHS to D to Blu-ray.
4K to 3D to the laser disc, like, and whatever it might be.
Regardless, if there's money behind, they're going to drag every ridiculous, useless piece of garbage that was long since written off. You know, I think a lot of films that bombed the box office may well have more broken even on.
Oh, sure. I'm sure of it. And there are some...
Don't look at it that way. But a prime example of this that fits both topic and the theme is a little movie from Avco Embassy. Avco Embassy, starring none other than Adrian Barba. A little called Swamp Thing.
There we go. Can't have 200 issues. You want to talk about Watchmen 2 while you're at it, buddy?
Yeah, we will. Mark my words, we will. So, essentially, what you have there is Avco Embassy comes out with this movie called Swamp Thing. It's seriously.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough.
I mean, nobody but went to see it. I mean, literally, I went to seven theaters, saw it seven times. I was the only one every time. And it did nothing to save it.
You tried your best, buddy.
Yeah, I was $7.
Oh, well, you gotta pay full price. You waited.
Yeah. No, but seriously, I actually saw it. I don't mind if I care. But I remember that this movie was one of the first that turned itself around between home video and subscription/television.
Right.
Suddenly it became so viable that Avco Embassy had a Swamp Thing money and created Return of Swamp Thing.
Return of Swamp Thing, yes. With Heather Locklear.
Heather Locklear, yes. Indeed.
God bless him. God bless everyone.
Yes, and Louis Jourdan is the only thing that made the first one. Adrian Barbeau's.
Yeah. I want an Adrian Barbeau bot for those of you that watch C-Lab 2021.
Yes. I want a Barbeau bot.
Barbeau bot.
Oh, 10 reels.
God damn it. The man with a bear with the strength of 3 bears. I'm hanging on with my toes. God, I need to go back and watch that again. Oh, if there's one thing that episode...
Of a gorilla, I would have this 10
gorillas. The Incredible Hulk. Speaking of TV shows, the Incredible Hulk-ish episode of C-Lab 2021 when the drink machine lands on him and he gets punctured by enough scorpions to give him Hulk-like strength. Radioactive scorpions.
And not only does he come Hulk-like, they deliberately made them strong.
Yes, yes, they did.
They took it so deep that only hardcore comic fans really understand where they're headed with them.
So I'm going to use that as a transition into something, since we're talking about the modern micro-renaissance, the micro ice age, the one that hit, what was it, the 1800s? The micro renaissance.
It was originally known as the Big Chill, and then hauled off of that for historians because all they think about was a bunch of disenfranchised yuppies.
I mean, so here's my theory, and it's a working theory, so it's like my Avengers theory. So bear with me. We as comic book fans.
Oh, I'll 10 bear.
You're gonna bear with me with the strength of 10 bears. So as comic book fans, growing up when we did, right? We were a society unto ourselves. I started thinking about us in terms of as if we were a lost Amazon tribe. We had our own culture. We had our own vocabulary. We had our own even economy, because we loved comic books. Comic books had value to us. Comic books had value at the comic shops, but nobody else attributed value to these things. We could have entire conversations that no one else would understand unless it was us. We had our own culture. We knew secret, we knew alter egos and issue numbers and superpowers and organizations and everybody who's ever been a member of those organizations. We were alone in the, we were a lost tribe, never seen by mankind, wholly ignored until somebody at Golan Globus or Metro Goldwyn and Mayer or Paramount went off course in their biplane. And flew over us.
Their auto-gyro.
Yeah, and flew over us and saw a reflection on some water and two, and they said, there's a lost tribe down there. So reported it back, and slowly, like Jane Goodall, people started creeping into our tribe and discovered within our tribe vast, miraculous medicines and art and science beyond that.
Sean Connery with a...
Oh, medicine man, shit. That is a super deep track. Mosquito netting in a tree.
What would more put you in the mind of medicine? The aforementioned Edison.
Wait, I'm drawing a conclusion. Wait. Oh, now the gears are... By the end of this show, I'm going to have a whole backstory for the Edison man. But slowly, this started leaking out. And somebody realized... The stuff that these guys have, it's viable. It could work in our society. That's when we started seeing this pushback, this fear of our culture being appropriated to the masses. People understand, like
yeah, they were starting to encroach on our world that was ours alone. We're supposed to,
right? Our you know, and as you know, when you corner cannibal aboriginals, we fight back viciously. And we leave no trace. And I think that is part of the Tanzanite age that I think needs to be talked about, is that while we have the Walking Dead and the Talking Dead and the Smocking Dead, that's where they put smocks on zombies and have them paint, Bob Ross style. Right, and the Chalking Dead, which is a vote off show where zombies do sidewalk art, and the Flocking Dead, where they make train sets and trees.
There's just all kinds of
you know, that's when we
Crockett Dead, all the pottery.
All the pottery. So and we have Daredevil and we have Luke Cage, which is phenomenal, but that's where this pushback on the internet starts to see this pushback. This is ours and you're taking it and you're not doing it right.
And you're not, that's the part.
How does that tie into your Tanzanite age?
Well, I think very much so. The arrival of Tanzanite A means that kind of pro-cultural group, if you will.
Right.
Because there is that sudden, you know, suddenly everything, it's like everything we've ever done of, but wrong.
Sure, sure.
It's like, you're doing what I always wanted to do, ask. You didn't ask me.
Right, you didn't bring us in on this. You just took it. You took from us. It's like
and
a...
Then we're all turning to Ian Malcolm. Selling it.
Well, it's like the Ian Malcolm... I'll tell you something about comic books. They find a way. That's Adam Warlock finds a way. But I think that that's something that we're seeing in terms of this as well. So what else does the micro renaissance show us?
Well, one of the things that it brings forth is that previously I talked about that potential.
Right.
You have kind of there's always been this potential energy that is now becoming a kinetic. So we're gonna add a little physics in.
Here we go.
The physics is something like that kinetic carnival with Gerald Walker.
What if I told you that comic books weren't as fictional as you think? Sorry, that was my Neil deGrasse Tyson impression.
All right.
Yeah, I've been working on it. I'm workshopping my one-man show.
So that's from the Canadian series Neil deGrasse Tyson Knee High.
Damn it. Just keep going. I can't deal with you right now.
I'm going to be all over the place.
You've drank a lot of fountain drinks tonight.
I did. I wanted to. I intended to drink. I actually tried the Fanta apple soda tonight.
There's a lot of descriptors there.
Yeah, I know. It's just...
One would say too many descriptors.
Talk about morbid curiosity.
It's moribund curiosity.
Yes, indeed. I gotta get in on this action. Who knew? You're getting to a point where, as you're coming out of that Renaissance age into kind of the it's sort of an amalgam age, because it's sort of like the Bronze and Silver Age. You're all just sort of poured in on top of each other.
Yes, it's
it's kind of like that bracelet, the Thin Man, you know, where it's all these different metals that are, was the first cast from
right
dad's casting metallurgy process, or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah, we're definitely in an alloy of some sort.
Yeah, because it's just they stack so quickly that you can't really define a Bronze Age and a Silver Age, but you do eventually begin to fall into the multiplicity of Golden Ages, and rather rapidly.
Well, I have a point that I can point to that I would say started the Tanzanite Age.
Okay.
And this is what were the name of the two paleontologists that fought?
Oh, Koch and Knight. Yes, I'm exactly talking about the escape.
This might be our Koch and whoever fight. I can point to one movie that I believe started the Tanzanite Age.
Okay.
And
then we'll go back and kind of retro a bit the precursors to arrival, or at least the beginnings of those Golden Ages.
Well, if you're not ready to, let's go back and then we'll come forward and we'll discuss our theories on when it started. Yeah.
Why is the class?
Yeah, we don't want that. We can't have two.
Yeah, we don't want to go like chapter 7.
History and theory. We can't do that. That's.
You want to progress forward. So going into your bronze, silver age, silver bronze age.
Sure.
As we become more gilded and subsequent. Jaded, perhaps. You know, it's almost like we even had a jaded age.
I think we did.
Not a jade age. Jade.
It was the X-Men movies. That was our.
I think X-Men comes sort of that catalyst point. So your silver age, your bronzed silver age, comes in at a point where superhero movies become more viable, more impossible.
Okay.
And it is during that period that another curiosity occurs, and that is the rise of Wizard.
Oh.
The magazine. Then.
You are the magazine that never should have been.
Aaron Seamus was a genius in a kind of Todd Marlin-ish way.
He was a baby genius in a three-piece suit and a top hat.
Really was.
That's the best description I can give.
Oh, I like that. He really was just a man ahead of his time, or a man-child ahead of his time.
Yes.
Perhaps. Because Garib Seamus, perhaps, if you want to. Because it was just all fart jokes and lewd behavior. And he took essentially, Wizard Magazine was born of a comic shop newsletter, believe it or not. It was his mom or somebody he
knew. Really?
Mom's comic shop.
I did not know. You've done some, you've dug deep. I'm proud of you.
I actually, that's off the top of my head knowledge for years of picking ramp up and not going away. Because it just doesn't me.
Right.
Nothing ever goes.
It's just in your brain.
That's right. It's in my old man forever.
Forever in my old man brain.
But yes, Wizard Magazine was effectively a conscious decision, one up they were doing. And that's why in early issue you have the fastest feat disappeared Wizard Magazine, Wizard Cards, Chubb Rand Gibbsmas. The Wizard Cards feature disappeared pronto because nobody wanted to look at that. The guy who's. Photos his column, and nobody gave a damn about the trades.
Right.
What was selling Wizard Magazine was the Wizard Magazine actually one-upped the annual Worcester Price Guide, also known as the Ice Guide. Because this was the point where Rob Overstreet was losing his footing in producing an annual book once a year, telling my collection is worth.
Right, you're ridiculous.
What do you think this is, old man?
This is preposterous.
Yeah, all of a sudden you had people becoming the Phineas Fogg of publishing who wanted everything now. you know, they recognize that you have a generation of collectors. Then I need to know how much my comics are worth today.
Right. Like, what's wrong with you?
You know, and so, you know, Overstreet was publishing monthly updates. How do you compete on that playing field? You become the best resource for the value of your comics. Because it was like a hedge fund almost.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were going around and just deliberately engineering a market that didn't exist.
And doing it quite brilliantly, in the sense that they would see a pattern of value. So if Todd McFarlane said, all right, I'm going to release, you know, or Top Cow, I think was a big one, because I think they came out right at the time that Image...
They were so... They started out with Marvel.
Right.
And Marvel was kind of like, you know, everybody started out at Marvel.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they look over, and here's this sexy young thing coming to see. Like, man.
But they started with Marvel, but Image was kind of on the cusp.
It's not like they tanged, it meant nothing. And then they just kind of fell in love with Image. They didn't see it coming. It's just...
Right.
They still love Marvel. And you know, DC was kind of like...
But they would say, okay, there's 18 covers for Darkness number 9. We've got to, you know, this is the cover that everybody's going to want. Let's price it at $10 higher than the diamond, you know, standard cover.
Exactly. But what that did was tell the loud tailors, especially after it set to sudden, have this artificial mind they were sitting on. And Wizard became overnight the go-to standard.
Mm-hmm.
A value. And you know, if you went to comic shop shows, inevitably half that just had a cop Wizard hand.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you ask somebody, how much is this? Well, here. Oh, well, what do you know? There's this month's Wizard. But the one thing Wizard did that I think helped usher in the Golden Ages, Ad Nauseam, and Tanzanite Age was Wizard casting. Somebody brilliant at Wizard thought, you know, we've got a lot of space to fill every month. Every few months, let's do what everybody's arguing anyway. I mean, did go see Batman,
right.
Burton, Batman, and immediately, universally declared the Danny DeVito was the only man on the face of God's green earth that was going to be able to play the Penguin.
Right.
And who didn't know, take up on the really heavy internet rumor that the fake story was going around that the sequel to Batman was Fred Savage's Robin, and Joker was still going to be alive because he had his luck death, Cher was Catwoman, and Danny DeVito was Penguin, the only thing they got right, and they were going to kidnapping Robin, hijack the space shuttle, just turn into, like, Axe Cop after that.
Right? It was like somebody just had a Mad Libs deck of cards, and they were just flipping them over.
Exactly. It was like a 7-year-old. I mean, who wrote this crap? But, you know, the Bronze Age is ushered in by, he's like Batman.
Sure.
Which Batman was, you know, 10 or 12 years earlier, easily. I read an article about a story dream for Batman where the writer had in mind David Niven as the Joker.
Wow.
And his Joker, his take on Joker, oddly enough, as much as I cringe and I take on every description that Click and Clack Half Brothers to say, like, Tony turns over in his grave every time he gets to say this. I take on every torsion of my face and clenching of my bowel anytime I think about the way they decide the Joker ought to be. Suicide Squad, I still have to give it that they were thinking in the same way this guy was. He was thinking like, okay, this is the guy who's very theatrical.
Right.
He wasn't wanting him to be the vat of chemicals joke.
Right.
And in ways, you know, his David Niven theatrical Joker inadvertently or surreptitiously informs Heath Ledger and informs other takes on him. But, you know, I think it's the point where Batman come along. And prior to that, the Bronze Age really typified by, to give us notes here, Richard Donner, Superman, Usher, and the bronze silver.
I agree with that.
That's the point. Hollywood says, we're willing to make a real movie.
But what's
about a real superhero.
But what's, and also I think it bears mentioning that also what we start to see in the comic books at this point.
I really want that real quick, that the little lilt there was to make the hairs on the back of Steve's neck stand up.
Oh, nice. I got other ways to make the hair on the back of Steve's neck stand up.
Well, I know we are.
How you doing, Steve? It's good to see you, buddy.
He loves that lunch lady voice.
Is the fact that the comic book Superman started to resemble the Christopher Reeves Superman. And that's that. That is another example of how the Tanzanite Age dovetails with the comic books. Is
yes, it, and after Tim Burton's Batman, mm-hmm. he had a story arc in the Bat titles called Destroyer, with the tagline "This changes everything." Subtitle of our issues. The idea was they were going to start incorporating the Anton first. It was Anton Stevens was on Battle 5.
Right.
And was founder in Animal House. But they were adopting the Anton look of Gotham.
Yes. Yes.
Thankfully, they never thought used the who's the franchise destroyer of the
last
two.
Zack Snyder.
No.
Oh no! No. Yes. God. Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, they didn't go with his god. But the thing about it was, you start to see that kind of deliberate center because things like the Donner Superman, especially this Batman, reminded DC of what the campy 60 Batman.
Right.
And they weren't doing anything in like that. Not remotely, but it's still their sales skyrocketed because that run to a greater audience.
Yes, of course.
Curiosity in the set. People start experiments. It was just experiment comics.
It was a phase.
Yeah, it was just a phase. We all did it. We don't all admit it. Did it.
But and that's in Batman after the movie, because before that you had the gray and black gold emblem, blue and black sometimes gold emblem Batman.
Oh yes, very.
I'm trying to think of the artist's name, and it's escaping me now. Of course.
No, Eddie could be like, he's a writer, writer.
Right. All of a sudden, Eddie just pops up. but it went from that style Batman, a kind of leotard, one, a darker armor based. Right, it's the Spider-Man effect.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's the movie started influencing comics instead of vice versa, what we started to see. So we moving out of those ages, what do we come into next?
Next up, we come into the Batman movies. I think the Batman was the first big franchise that just kept giving and giving and giving, even when it didn't give to our satisfaction, we kept coming back for more.
Right.
I guess we kind of hoped that the Schumacher thing was just a phase in its own right. But, you also started to see, I think the studios began to see the possibilities, publishers began to see possibilities, and so you get things like Marvel setting up a cash register, and Sony, Fox, and others come along, and they, it's like one of those progressive, it's like a store, and Sony comes along, tosses Spider-Man, X-Men, their shopping cart, Fox grabs the recently refurbished Fantastic Four that was cleaned up after Corman.
It was a hobo cardboard box that Corman slept in for about 3 years, is what it was.
And so they're coming in and buying, and Marvel's just ringing up the cash register. They don't really care.
Right.
Luckily, something seemed tenable at the time. So nobody bought the Avengers.
Because it was impossible to make.
Yeah, box set. Nobody was going to touch Thor with 20 catalog.
Not after that Hulk movie.
Oh, yeah, with Hammer. I am a particular.
Yeah, particular, sure.
God, too. Thankfully that didn't happen. But two things happened is all of a sudden, a lot of the big guns are sold off to the highest bid.
Right.
Which makes good business sense to suits and account running Marvel at the time. And then something curious happens. This is where teeter on the edge. This is why it's a bronze to silver age.
Okay.
It's sort of like tinted silver.
Okay.
Not even silver age, nor is it bronze age, because there's bronze and there's silver and there's even some lead. And the lead that weighed down the bronze silver was a largely forgotten, good reason, little move called Man Thing.
See, go ahead. You can go ahead about your Man Thing.
It wasn't a porno. Yes. And number two, took that approach. I think this was a big wake-up call to Marvel. It took the approach to, Marvel said, here's how much put on check. After that, don't care.
Right.
Because they're probably thinking, hey, you know what would be good right now? What? Let's relaunch Man-Thing. Because Man-Thing is going to be, like, back in the public eye. This is going to be really cool. And then they see this film, they're like, what's that? That's Man-Thing. This is Man-Thing. That's like tree eye. It looks like something Edison made.
Well, and I think it's important to note.
Looks like something that Edison Man did find.
If
1910.
I think it's important to note when it comes to Man-Thing, what we saw was I think you're absolutely right. I think at that point the realization set in that Marvel thought we have made mistakes.
Yes, they began to realize that they began to look at things like Corman's Do It Tomorrow or the Do or Die Fantastic Four, the rubber ear Captain America, the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. Suddenly get this realization that maybe we need to think about how we couch our license, how we allow to use our stuff.
Well, I think the thing about Man-Thing is, and I think the reason that Man-Thing is so startling, right, is that I guarantee you there was a boardroom and somebody went in from, and I who made Man-Thing? It wasn't Asylum, but it was...
Oh, yeah, it was somebody. I mean, and Man-Thing, you know, in all fairness, if you're going to just, like, sell me off money or the rights off or money, you know, what's Man-Thing?
But that's my point, is someone in a boardroom somewhere was like, nobody gives a shit about Man-Thing, and they sold it off. And then a year later, the meeting was, people give a shit about Man-Thing.
Yeah, have you seen the mail room? You know how we have a little slot? We got like a big slot for Avengers mail. Like, there's like a little slot for Pip Roll or Wood God.
Right.
All of a sudden, the Man-Thing, they just have like used God's slot for some Man-Thing's mail. Who thought?
So while I know the direction you're heading, the other direction is, here's a realization that people actually give a shit about this stuff, and now they have a way of getting us that information, and we're seeing a backlash, and backlash can be translated into dollars.
Yes.
You know, and I know you were going in the other, a similar, but...
Actually, but you are also seeing, so in that,
right,
you're seeing the rival of the fanboy press that was the precursor to the internet. Suddenly you had a lot of publications other than Starlog that were telling you, you know, this is in the works. You were finding out about me that were in the works. You're getting excited, and you'd be like, oh, you know, there was a time I liked Man-Thing.
And there that, sir, is no Man-Thing.
Yeah. You know, whatever knows fear burns the Man-Thing's touch, but whoever wants to not burn their money, don't waste your time with this stink bomb.
But yes, Man-Thing was definitely a pivotal moment.
That was sort of the wake-up call. And then you get into the next phase of this, is where Hollywood and the license holder simultaneously. And I say license holder, not holders, because the curious thing was, at this stage game, DC Comics is owned by one of the largest in this film companies in the nation.
Correct.
Who seem to not have the idea that they own a comic company.
Right.
So, in many ways, they're still, let's make a Batman and a Superman. Oh, what about Teen Titans and, you know, all these hundreds of other characters? I mean, Wonder Woman, everybody, oh, yeah, we got those two, don't we? But we got to make movies, you know, people want romance comedies and action adventure movies and the superhero thing. It's just never been viable. They were still living in 1978.
Well, Warner Brothers treated DC Comics like the basement laboratory that Val Kilmer hung out in Real Genius. Like, nobody, like, they were having, like, bubble slides, slip and slides in the hallways, and everybody, like, oh, you damn kids, if we catch you, if the dean catches you, like, oh, sucks to your ass, Mark. Like, that's pretty much the way it was treated. It wasn't looked at as a viable commodity, so why look at it at all?
Yeah, I hate you.
Right.
Because it's not exactly, that's not, we're in the business of makies. They're in the business of makes.
Correct.
And nary the twain shall meet, except on the odd occasion we throw some money at that Franken guy to Batman.
That Beetlejuice son of a bitch. Yeah. Make us a Batman movie.
He made that Beetlebug.
He made that Beetle bombs. He made that Edward Knife Fingers thing. Let's get that guy on it. That's a natural choice.
Get that barber guy out here.
All Hollywood. All Hollywood. They used to shoot opiates between my toes to wake me up between takes.
I don't watch these things. I just watch the money roll. All Hollywood.
I watch the ticker.
That's right. I'm watching Wall Street. Old Hollywood. Watch them. He's got time for that. I'm not a kid. But the kids love it. Old Hollywood. So, you know, begin to see the arrival of the Marvel movie.
Yes.
Marvel suddenly realizes we need to rein in filmmakers. And somehow, whether by accident or design, there is this perfectly timed arrival of the realization we're on the cusp of zero film genre. This urgency has arrived. And we are ill-prepared. We may as well kiss amazing these properties goodbye if somebody's going to roughshod on them. And suddenly they stop writing bad licenses.
Right.
They start paying attention. Create something unique. They license core concepts. They lease out rather than license out. And they say, you, Studio A, can make this movie, but you're making our, we're not going to make as much money as if just sold it wholesale. But back, we're going to get a universe that can, and when, and you know, Rick used to like to throw in my face that I said that Avengers, you're never going to get Sony's Spider-Man, this company's Punisher, this company, Iron Company's Thor. They're never going together, though. And of course, who could have seen a business plan like what emerged from this bridge coming down pike? What happened is we literally, Marvel ushered the first bunch
right.
of comedies by one simple, really. And that was simply to take and let make these, but they're, everything they do, the design, casting, everything about your movie belongs to Negan. you know, I just realized we're the Negan of licensors. So that's essentially that masterstroke of business genius is really what ushers in the first, second, third, and fourth golden ages of comics. And these are the ages that give us things like Punisher, which I had no desire to see.
Right.
Until, was it that one? Whatever the hell studio was set up, I think the very first Wizard World Texas, showing their the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold on John Travolta.
Yeah.
Shot John Travolta as the bad guy. Changed my tune. How this makes me wanted to see it. And I actually enjoyed it. It was actually a decent movie. As movies about a guy who just goes around and slaughters people.
Right.
He's sort of an anti-hero hero that he is. And you start to then begin, you know, one of the most brilliant things that the producers of Captain America did was to incorporate the first Avenger.
Yes.
In the title. Because that is rife from us. And it was a promise kept.
We saw the exit of Avi Arad.
Yes, I think in ways he was a brilliant idiot.
Yes, yes.
He brought so much good and so much bad simultaneously to Marvel.
But we, and the appointment of Jeff Loeb as the kind of cinema czar for Marvel Comics. That's in the same time period as this, and that's when we start seeing these this kind of overarching mandate.
Yeah,
that's brilliant overarching mandate that I remember vividly.
That was your garage band, was overarching mandate.
That was my punk band. Yeah, you made all the posters for it. it's off camera jokes.
Love them.
I remember conversations every movie that comes out now. And at this point, we're sort of suffering from movie burnout, I think. But in the early days of these movies coming out, you know, when I met Cole was how long ago now? 10 years ago, probably?
Getting close. It hasn't already surpassed them.
And when did Captain America come out? About 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember we knew each other when Captain America came out.
Oh, yes.
We've known each other when all of these current batch, the...
Oh, yes. We all, a bunch of us all converged in Austin so that we could go see Avengers at the Alamo Draft House.
But you know, we would be talking before and be like, there's no way they're going to XYZ. And then we would come back later and be like, I can't believe they did XYZ. Like, they were doing it for real. Everything we had ever wanted to see.
You turn in Malcolm, you see.
They did it. Life finds a way.
That's right.
But yeah, so is that, that's the golden age. That's when we started talking about the golden age of movies.
The golden age.
Yeah, and every 2 years was another golden age.
Oh yeah, and then they got the point every year. Was another golden age. And they truly were golden ages. I mean, not to sound dismissive about the fact that they were, in fact, golden ages. There were just so damn many of them that they were beginning, the term golden age was no longer appropriate.
Right.
And then we begin to enter the inevitable Tanzanite age. And the reason you have to describe have a Tanzanite age is just to maintain viability of ages. Because they're just too dark. So the Tanzanite age has arrived. We are now living the Tanzanite age. Now we enter the Tanzanite age. We truly begin to emerge from the golden ages into what we began to define as the Tanzanite age. And I think that begins really around, I would wager to say that the Tanzanite age was coined around the time, the point where I get fed up and declare a Tanzanite age may well have been around the time of around the period where you have Avengers Age of Ultron.
Okay.
Because Avengers Age of Ultron is literally like you can. If that isn't exactly when, because I'm still hard pressed to figure out what issue that was coined in, because I went for the flavor art and found a picture of like a bunch of cut Tanzanite stones, just to confuse people. Because unlike this issue, we weren't espousing the Tanzanite age just yet.
Right.
But you can say that the breaking off point of the Golden Ages is that. Where the Marvel movies falter a bit.
They almost got too big for themselves. They collapse under their own weight.
Because it's around this time you're starting to see the Spider-Man franchise is tripping on itself. The Fantastic Four franchise is can't figure out what it wants to be when it grows up. You're still getting things like Watchmen. You're still getting all kinds of other things going on. So it's that point where you're transitioning from gold into there's a tremendous potential that the Golden Age could be over and take everything with it,
or it's evolving into something much more limited, much more precious, and
or certainly very unique, like
much more unique
Tanzanite.
Exactly, where you might still have this reoccurrent, what is it Tommy Lee Jones says in Under Siege? That's the thing about a revolution, is it always comes back around in your face. Is you might always, this revolution of gold ages going on over here, while a concordant, misunderstood Tanzanite age happens beside it.
Yes, I think that's a good appraisal. And it also saves my bacon no matter when the hell that was coined.
There you go. I'm always here for you, buddy. The legal department is always the man of letters is always here for you.
There we go. I appreciate that. So yes, now we are truly entering that Tanzanite age, and there's some beauties there that typify that. And I think Captain America Civil War was a surprising.
Oh, so good.
And I think in many ways you could say that even though it didn't launch the Tanzanite Age, Captain America Civil War is the starter's gun for the Tanzanite Age, the official point where you can say the Tanzanite Age has truly come of its own and will now progress, because Civil War brought us that first cross-company synergy that goes beyond anything. The untouchable is now within reach.
Well, and I
and the possibilities become the more endless.
But I think that you're correct. I think as a point of reference, as dropping a pin in a map. I think there's something else that we're missing that you and I have talked about ad nauseum, which is and not in a bad way. Is that the Tanzanite Age represents something that nobody ever got in comic book movies before, I would say before Civil War, really before Civil War hit. And that was, you can have a comic book movie. There was a definition to the comic book movie. It was an origin story. It was a fight scene. It was resolution. Even in the Goyer Batman movies, it was, conflict resolution, origin conflict resolution.
Yes.
In Captain America Civil War, we saw our first superhero genre movie. And that's when you and I started saying, wait a second, they've hit on the perfect formula, which is, why not, if you've got comic book characters as this archetype, why not start infusing these different genres with your comic book characters, creating this perfect amalgam of movie? And that is what the Tanzanite Age is for me.
And I think the other thing that really typifies the Tanzanite Age is, in many ways, Captain America does this, because what it does, and this is something the Avengers had done brilliantly as well, is you have that empire building that DC, unfortunately, still has, that Warner still doesn't get, to their detriment in many ways. But you have within this structure I think the Tanzanite Age also brings us this unique way of allowing different filmmakers to make different films within the comic book genre that are part of a greater universe and are allowed to be their own thing.
Right.
And then tie beautifully into each other. So you get, and this is, again, where Captain America Civil War is our go-to. Because you bring in things like Ant-Man, who Ant-Man played a little more off the cuff, a little more fun, a little more frolic.
Right, it was the action comedy movie.
Yeah, and then you had other movies that were like Captain America, Winter Soldier, that were taking a deeper, more poignant look at the character.
Delving film.
Yeah. And yeah, you're basically allowing the comic book genre to adapt to be approach any taste.
Right.
And then let those characters all come together, but still be the same characters they were in their other films.
And
so nobody has to suddenly become the, oh, you're all serious now.
Yeah, right. And you start to see
our cereal here.
The cinematic universe. Another key of the Tanzanite Age is the melding of a cinematic universe with various other universes, like TV universes in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., in the most prevalent in the new Luke Cage series that dropped.
Oh, yes.
You know, in Daredevil, in Jessica Jones, there's all the talk about the catalyst for all of this, the incident in New York City. You know,
and that ties that not only into the Avengers, but into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
Because you're allowing things like, oh, here's the Judas bullet.
Exactly.
Which takes from the same thing that half the episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are about, is Sithari tech being incorporated by the good and the bad.
By Justin Hammer tying it back to Iron Man.
Exactly.
Like, they've entered this kind of, you know, the primordial stew of comic book that what crawls out is beautiful and amazing and unique almost every time, and shocking in a joyous fashion to anybody who not, and it's not just for us anymore.
Like, exactly.
Before the Easter eggs were only for us. Now they're for everyone, because everybody's seen the Avengers. Everybody's seen the Iron Man movies. Everybody's seen Captain America and Thor, so when they're talking about a guy carrying a hammer, you're like, I know, I get that reference.
I know that guy! Yeah, yeah, you're like, yeah, it's like the flying monkeys, you're getting it.
Exactly. So why...
And also, the other thing you're getting, and I'm going to really take this Tanzanite Age a little step further, you've actually inspired beyond what my original thinking with the Tanzanite Age. The Tanzanite Age is aptly named, and I'm not trying to be self-aggrandizing here too much, but it occurs to me that the Tanzanite was an ideal material to typify, to define this age, because the Tanzanite, the raw Tanzanite, has been mined and chiseled and polished. The Tanzanite Age gives us a multifaceted.
There you go.
It gives us that luster.
I like it. I like it.
And that is really why truly we are in the Tanzanite Age of comics, because now we have so many facets that create the whole and make it that beautiful creature of which you spoke.
Now, if you know, now you're pointing at Captain America Civil War as the, or Winter Soldier as the kind of...
I'm looking at Civil War as really being the final polish, okay, if you will.
So
on
if
the Tanzanite Age, we have you know, the craftsmen have come in. This is now Winter Soldier is not really your rough cut, but you're also not at the point where you're prepared to put it out in the case at Tiffany's yet.
Sure. So
it's a beautiful thing, but it still needs a little polish. Needs to be set in a nice as a ring or brooch.
So now I'm going to take it to the place where I'm most comfortable.
Okay.
So if Captain America Civil War is the hurricane, right? I'm going to take
it. Rocks you like one.
I'm going to sound a thunder this.
All right.
We're going to roll this back to the butterfly that flapped its
wings. You know,
wings.
I woke last night to that sound.
I woke last night to the sound of thunder.
See? All right.
So I'm going to take you back to the butterfly that flapped its wings.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And the way I look at it, if I'm going to point my finger, because we were talking before the show, you never know an age until you're in it. You can't.
Or even until it's literally ages are meant to be defined afterward, but such is the age that we live in.
Right.
We are no longer comfortable waiting to have.
So to define
that's why
it.
We are in the quote unquote modern age. That's why you have modern art. Well, isn't modern art, wasn't, you know, didn't the Medicis enjoy modern art? Wasn't Picasso, well, I guess Picasso was a modern artist. Damn it. But I mean, you know, every age of art or every age of anything was once the modern age.
So I'm going to take us into the Wayback Machine and point my finger at where I believe the Tanzanite Age truly started. Now, I think we can define it with Civil War. I like to define it with Winter Soldier. I think that Winter Soldier, I think anything beyond Winter Soldier at this point is really just polishing a diamond. I think that Winter Soldier was kind of, in my opinion, up to even now, the height of comic book movies. I think Civil War is brilliant for its spectacle, but I think for what it was, Winter Soldier is still, in my mind, the height of comic book movies. But
I think, yeah, in many ways, I would have to say that that's exactly – it's sort of like Winter Soldier is the cut Tanzanite, and Civil War is that cut Tanzanite set into some sort of presentation piece.
But the what I'm
you can't have the finished jewelry without that.
Yes. Yeah.
Beautiful cut.
But I want to go back to the carbon under the mountain that was crushed into the Tanzanite that allowed us to have in 1998, a man walked into a boardroom at Marvel and said, "I want to make a movie about Blade."
I like where you're headed.
They said, "Okay, how much money do you need?" And they said $45 million. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of money in 1998. And that was a risk. But Avi and a couple of the other producers were like, we can get you that money. Who are you going to have write this thing? And the director was Stephen Norrington. Who are you going to have write this thing? Well, we know a guy. He's done a few things. His name is David Goyer. He's a huge comic book fan. They make the Blade movies. Now, there's a few reasons that this is important. Number one is because it went on to make $70 million domestically and $131 million gross worldwide, which doubled the money they gave them, tripled the money they gave them. So it was, and the reason that is so important is because the movies that made that kind of money as a comic book movie prior to Blade were your Batmans and your Supermans. This is the first movie to come along that was not a flagship character.
Yes, indeed.
That made money as a comic book movie. And why did it make money as a comic book movie? Because it appealed to comic book fans, and it also appealed to the general action movie viewer.
And ultimately also to the vampire genre. It crossed so
horror
many...
Horror movies.
Horror movie and vampire. You know, even within horror movies, you have that subgenre of vampire. Like, I'll go see anything with a vampire in it. But even if it's that god-awful last film in the whatever the hell that was, Twilight series.
But this was the first comic book movie that was not a flagship movie that the movie house and Marvel and the director and the writer all got behind and said, "We're going to make a movie." Not only that, they made the movie to be built in. It was the first movies to be made to be built into a larger universe for Marvel. They haven't used it yet, but it is technically canon.
Yes.
These movies are technically canon. Number two, it was the first to, within its own housing, be built into a larger universe. It was made to, it was the first to have, because the third movie had, who all was in that? Abigail Whistler, it had, who did what's his name play?
I know who you're talking about, the supporting male lead there.
Deadpool played him, yeah.
It was all...
But this is the movie that allowed comic book movies to be made with two canon.
Major studio,
two canon.
And also, I'm told Blade 3 is also wherever it takes place. has a huge Esperanto-speaking population because street signs are all in Esperanto.
It's awful. But that being said,
thank you to Michael Cross, if you happen to be listening to the show, who is, who not only pointed this out to me, but is also an Esperantist.
Really?
Yes, he is apparently fluent in, much like Tonto, is fluent in Esperanto.
But what that did was open the door to show that comic book movies could be a viable commodity to be marketed. Even in weird, because I mean, Blade wore a Blade costume. He had a weird red cape thing. He had a red turtleneck and a tactical thing, you know, weird stuff carved in his head. Like, it was Blade. It was as close to a comic book as
he had the Blade fade, if you will.
That's absolutely true. Also, the first diverse, massive blockbuster comic book movie. Showing it opened so many doors and allowed for people to see so many things. And without the Blade movies, without Goyer, who went on to write the rest of them, Blade 2 had Guillermo del Toro as the director. You know, it was very impressive. Without that, without Wesley Snipes, we probably would not have the Avengers. So,
oh yeah, and I think also that's a good point that without Blade, you wouldn't see studios stepping up,
taking a chance
on comic book movies, because either they were too obscure a comic, or even taking a chance on comic book movies that no one knew were comic book movies, like Men in Black.
Right.
But also taking on comic movies that on concept alone, like Cowboys and Aliens.
I remember when Blade was coming out, and I was like, and I was brainwashed at that point, and we all were.
Oh, yes.
That, you know, if you were going to see a comic book movie, it had to be a Batman movie or a Superman movie or an X-Men movie. It had to be big name, blockbuster, you know, those type of movies. And I was like, how the hell do they think they're going to get away with making a Blade movie? Like, are you kidding me? I hardly know who Blade is. And I've read comics for the past 20 years at that point, you know? And I went and saw it, and I was blown away. Like, it wasn't the best movie ever, but I was blown away. I was like, this is exactly what comic book movies should be.
Exactly. And it also opened the door for the indie comic film, like some of those that I mentioned. And things like Hellboy. I remember going to see some movie with Frank one time, and we were coming out of the theaters. As you went in, you didn't see behind you were these giant banners of these different characters. And so as we're exiting the auditoriums, we're coming down the hallway, and then, you know, you see where you've come in, and here are these big banners hanging up, like, you know, 20 feet above the doors, gigantic images of William H. Macy and Hank Azaria and Ben Stiller, and Frank is just almost in tears. Mystery Men! Like, what the flying hell happened to you? Either you seizing? I was like looking for a spoon, and turned out he was, you know, he knew them from their origins in Flaming Carrot comics. What are the chances that characters from the twisted and bizarre mind of Bob Burden from Flaming Carrot comics,
right,
would warrant what I consider one of the best superhero movies ever, because it proved what Avengers was capable of doing at its best, or in, you know, Captain America Civil War was the Avengers' best, quite frankly, was that you could have an ensemble superhero film with 15 to 18 characters that had a lot of screen time and not be Batman and Robin.
Right. Right.
Which had fewer characters and a much more convoluted attempt at a narrative. And like, this is, I honestly consider Mystery Men proof of concept for the Avengers.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
But it is truly Blade that brings us Hellboy and Mystery Men. It is Blade that brings us Watchmen. It is Blade and technology catching up to the comic book. Watchmen is the George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones of comics.
Right.
Deliberately meant to be unfilmable.
Right.
And then, damn it, it was supposed to be unfilmable. crazy bastards you are.
If we're in the Tanzanite age, as we start to wrap this up...
I want to touch on the Tanzanite age briefly, as we talked about how, you know, you don't know you're in an age until you're in it, or more specifically, you're not even supposed to know you're in it until after it's been defined. You know, like, did the greatest generation around go, we're the greatest generation?
Right, exactly.
No, somebody called them that app post facto. But we are living in that age now as a society where we want to know what age we're living in.
Right.
To the point where you and I spoke before the show, I'd already, you know, declared the Tanzanite age. I'd already named this issue. When we were getting within like 170 some odd, I was already plotting up to 220, or I think, at that point. I already knew that this was Tales from the Tanzanite Age. That was set.
Right.
And just last weekend, I was listening to something on one of the NPR shows. I don't know. I think it was actually a TED Talks. And they were talking about the different geological ages, the epochs, the periods, and such, and the various ages. And they were talking about this idea that was being put forth of literally declaring that we live within, declaring the name of the age in which we exist. You know, like the late, the Pleistocene and the Precambrian, the Cambrian, which, you know, the organisms of the Cambrian, Precambrian, had no idea that they were the precursor of the Cambrian. So there were a lot of trilobites who were like, wow, I never really thought about that. But... there's been an idea proposed that we are currently living in the Anthropocene era. The idea being that geologically, tens of thousands of years from now, you could point at the rock strata and see, okay, here's where mankind really began to exert itself mm-hmm. on every aspect of the environment, changing everything on the earth into something else that only exists solely because of man. A diamond exists because the earth itself, or a tanzanite for that matter, the earth itself is exerting pressure on raw materials within itself. Plastic, fossil fuel, you know, processed fossil fuels, the pink slime in our children's lunchroom fare, all exists solely because of the Anthropocene. And that's why I feel it's like, wow, I've been justified in predetermining this age. And I think as you look at the strata of the comic book movie, you can see that now we're, you know, who knows what the next age will be. Maybe about issue 360, I'll declare a new age for us.
There you go.
I'm full of myself now.
Just wait till he gets a hold of it.
But we were talking about before the show, and Andy said you should really bring that up. And I don't want to let that get away from us, that the Anthropocene was a fascinating concept and did tie in beautifully to something we'd already, you know, this was going to be the Tales from the Tanzanite Age regardless.
Right. It didn't matter.
You didn't come up with this TED Talks. I want to establish that right now.
But where do
now,
we...
Now let's go back to the TED stage.
But Where do we go? We've got shows, and if you look at the shows that are in production now, the movies that are in production, we've got movies and shows based on everything from a personal favorite of mine, Sex Criminals, Matt Fraction's Sex Criminals, all the way up to a show in production for Jim Starlin's Dreadstar.
Yes, exactly.
Like, where are we going?
I've forgotten about that. I think we're now getting into that. The other curious facet, if you will, of the Tanzanite Age is like anything. If you go, you know, you're going to find, like, a diamond. If you go to Tiffany's, you're going to find the finest diamonds. I think they come from Antwerp.
Damn it.
Nobody fans of... Okay, yeah, for your Snatch fans. You know, the finest diamonds that have ever been mined and cut by the finest craftsmen are going to be there. But you can go to Walmart and find very nice diamonds.
Sure.
Would Tiffany wipe their ass with them? Hell no. Because for one thing, their diamonds are very tiny and you don't get a lot of coverage. And they're sharp enough that you can cut glass with them, so you really don't want them orbiting Uranus.
Damn it. Did you seriously just...
I seriously suggested diamonds orbiting Uranus.
Oh, God.
But how cool would it be if Voyager found that there were actually, like, a diamond ring around... Anyway.
Around Uranus?
This is how this is... This used
I
to be
hate
a scholarly...
everything.
I'm going to lose all my letters. Or hopefully we'll get some letters. But no, seriously though, like any precious thing, any sort of thing that we find beauty in, there are levels to which it is presented.
Right.
From a flawless cut and full of carrots or whatever they do with diamonds. I don't know diamonds at all. But, you know, to just the cheapest industrial grade diamond that's encrusted onto a tungsten carbide drill bit to open great holes in the teeth that have already naturally developed holes. They can cram some stuff in there they'll figure out later causes cancer. I'm going everywhere.
You're all over the place now.
I am all in and all over. So you're going to have some, we're going to be mining some amazing gemstones. We're going to be mining some industrial grade gems, some utility grade, if you will. But we are now going to be very deep, hip deep in the Tanzanite age. And we're going to see, there's so many tools in the toolbox. And it's going to remain to be seen who's going to use the existing tools, like, say, hiring a decent writer, hiring a director worth his salt, over simply saying, oh, look, we can, you know, do movies about guys who get their head blown off and it grows back just because we can.
Right.
And who cares, you know, just make the movie, we'll worry about the story later if anybody cares. We'll put a story in the sequel, just like they did with Swamp Thing. So, again, you know, what we see coming toward us is a wonderful thing because it's all of that raw material, you know, on a big conveyor belt.
Right.
And you've got somebody, we're going to be the ones literally scrutinizing it with a fine lens. We're going to be the jewelers who decide which things do we set into a fine gold bauble and which do we just simply, you know, encrust our free time, you know, or guilty pleasure, you know, there's nothing else on, I'll watch this.
Yeah, right.
Because I can. And that again, there are so many things that typify that really, I think I am actually rather surprised how calling it the Tanzanite Age proved far more appropriate than I had dared imagine at the time, or even considered imagining, just was something, a fun little declaration that made me sound like I knew what the hell I was talking about. And like you said on one of the shows, oftentimes there's greater wisdom behind the things that I fart out than I could possibly imagine. So what we have here is this unique progression where one thing begets another. You have the rise of technology, the rise of the internet. You have the rise of the fan voice that I spoke of Wizard World. They would do those casting calls. Apparently they were madly in love with the idea of putting a wrestler in every other movie. Right. If there's one thing they loved at Wizard more than fart jokes, it was professional wrestlers. And, you know, that gave rise to, oh, yeah, The Rock's going to be Beast in the X-Men movie. And thank God they hired an actor and not a body. But I think, you know, we're reaching that period where you're going to see a serious – Hollywood is taking the kind of serious look to go back even before Wizard. Starlog and other magazines used to say, you know, such and such, this movie is in production. I wish I could find a catalog of all the movies we were promised.
Right.
That never happened. Years and years and years ago, I found a prospectus that had somehow wound up in a in Duncanville bookstore for one of the major studios. I can't remember if it was Fox or Warner Brothers or who. I don't know if it turned out to be the studio that maintained the rights and made the film, or if they changed hands and somebody else ultimately made it. But the first I ever heard of Michael Crichton's Congo was in this prospectus.
That's awesome.
15 years before Joe Don Baker graced the silver screen. Or 10 years, something, some ungodly period of time. There were so many things in that prospectus that we never saw, and Starlog and other magazines used to publish lists of movies that were coming up. And I remember going back one time, finding an old Famous Monsters or a Starlog, and going like, nope, didn't happen. Yes, sort of, nope.
Still haven't gotten that H.P. Lovecraft in the Mountains of Madness movie, damn it.
There you go, see? And, you know, nowadays we have so much information handed to us instantly that oftentimes we forget to go back and try to find those lists of things we were promised and never got. But the promises are getting fulfilled at an alarming rate as well, sometimes wonderfully, sometimes poorly, but they're happening.
Right.
And it's really kind of a staggering thing. So we needed something more than just, it's the latest golden age.
Yeah, yeah, we did. But I think we did it justice. I think that the Tanzanite age is upon us, and I think that we have defined it. And when historians find this digital record...
Yes, indeed.
They're going to point to this, and then they're going to go back and watch Blade, and it's going to become a religion. That's my hope.
Like Wild Stallions.
That's right. It's exactly right. All of a sudden, Wesley Snipes is
a future society.
A Christ figure. Wesley Snipes has become the Godhead, and
go back in time. Mark my words. There's going to be a time where Wesley Snipes just disappears. What happened? We know.
And
listeners of the show know that some sort of Rufus character came back, and
George
and got
Carlin
it.
Came back and got Wesley Snipes.
Yeah,
damn
like,
it!
Seriously?
Well, why don't?
Why not? What else am I doing?
Why don't
I didn't get the damn Black Panther movie I was promised 25 years ago?
In true full circle fashion. At New York Comic Con this year, there was a discussion about how they were in talks to bring Wesley Snipes back as Blade and reintroduce him into the progenitor of the Marvel Universe, to reintroduce him into the Marvel Universe as a whole.
How cool.
Since we are now getting into the mystical side and the darker, horror-y side. So if they do that, it will be full circle, the prophecy will be fulfilled, and the Godhead will be reborn, and Rufus will be right. So, there you go.
Yes, and we will both simultaneously celebrate and mourn, because Wesley Snipes will simultaneously be back and disappear.
And I think that might begin the hematite age.
Plus, if anything ever happens to Wesley Snipes, I am now suspect number one.
If I'm calling it right now. When Wesley Snipes enters the Marvel Universe, a tangent age will be born, the hematite age, and it will be the grandest age of all. That's all I'm going to say. All right, why don't you wrap us up so we can get out of here?
What is hematite, by the way? Because I'm thinking more the next age has to be typified by some sort of noble gas. Because it can't even be something tangible.
Well, the hematite would be a tangent age. So
then we would move into the noble gas.
Yeah, you can move in a linear fashion into the noble gases, but the hematite age is a break-off age. So
Like a little sub-epic.
Populated solely by Wesley Snipes, in my mind, so...
Well, all I can say is that the Tanzanite Age is an epic.
It really is. And on that pun, why don't you wrap us up? We've been talking for two hours.
I think
hours.
We need to, because otherwise we would be here all night.
We will.
Go see Doctor Strange in November, folks. You can... like I have to tell you
what
that.
What the hell was that? Is that a sponsor?
Like all of our sponsors, an unpaid sponsor.
That's right. Casper Mattresses can kiss our ass.
That's right. So,
we love you, Casper. Sponsor the show.
So you can find us at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You may already be listening to us there. You might be listening to us on Podbean. You may be finding us now on Cinelinks. We are now powered by Cinelinks, so we are thrilled to be part of that family. It's like the Tanzanite age of the JCU.
It really is.
If you are catching us from Cinelinks, be sure and check out JediCole.com for all kinds of other podcasts. Cinelinks is carrying this show and the Rancor Pit, which the Rancor Pit Live is the reason that we have got asked to join the Cinelinks family in the first place. But my co-host there, Eddie Medina, does Figments. Catherine, my wife, and Bobby Blakey,
my wife.
Get it back, my other wife, do What'd You Think, PJ Dunn and Juice, the Vega Bomber and Juice, who do the do-it-yourself. So many wonderful podcasts. I'm eventually going to start writing feature articles again for my page. Check out JediCole.com. There's all kinds of stuff. Go back into the archive. Discover the tons of stuff we've been doing over the last 4 or 5 years. It's amazing. Over at Vocal Media on WatchOnAirLive.com. Or by now it may be vocalmedia.com. The Rancor Pit Live has changed online homes as well as physical homes. As you're listening to this, in a couple of weeks, Eddie Medina and I will be broadcasting live on the first Sunday of November, and then back on our first and third Sundays of the month. The Rancor Pit Live is going to be coming to you now from the CBS radio building. That's in amazing. Dallas, Texas, in a studio once utilized by Russ Martin. It's insane how we have been very blessed to be a part of what was originally DeepElementAir.com. Jansen Ray loved the Rancor Pit, asked us to join. It has been a wonderful roller coaster ride for over 2 years now. Certainly, I'm just, like I said, the Tanzanite age of the JCU. It's been amazing where my own personal pet project has taken me. So before I gush anymore, you can write to me, if I haven't put you off to that idea, at jcumail@yahoo.com. Drop us a line sometime. Let us know what you think, or if you got an idea for some stuff you want us to talk about. Who knows? You might be surprised and find out it's coming somewhere between now and June of 2018. We've plotted all the way through June of 2018. That's for the nuts. Love of God. That's just insane to me. On Twitter, at the Jedi Cole U. And you can look for the Facebook pages, the Jedi Cole Universe, the Rancor Pit, JCU Star Wars Podcast, the this show, Hey Kids Comics, has a page. I don't always put things on all of them. Or you can follow me, Cole Houston, on Facebook to find out weird, stupid things about my life and see pictures of the collection and stuff. And coming soon to the JCU, a new podcast, Isle of Toys, or I Love Toys, depending on how. We'll be talking about all kinds of things on the toy aisle with a lot of great folks. Because I can't do enough damn podcasting, apparently. And I'm veg. I can't.
There you go. Yeah. So buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Go see your movies. We do live in a Tanzanite age of comic book cinema. We are all blessed to be there. No matter what else is going on in the world, you can watch your favorite superheroes larger than life playing out the things that you read about since you were 5 years old, and that is a grand time to be alive. Thank you all for 200 magnificent, awe-inspiring, for us, not, you know, this isn't me having a full head, for us to be able to do this 200 times is amazing, and to do it, and to have the ability to do it 200 more is a blessing, and we wouldn't be doing it without listeners and people out there paying attention, and we thank you all for that, and thank you to Cole and Catherine and everybody who has supported the show since day one. It's amazing. And before I gush anymore, I think we should get out of here. So
we should, but I want to point out two things. Number one, we are plotted beyond now, but I had the other day hit the pre-plotting, the pre-assigning of shows all the way up through our upcoming 100 issues from now, or 99 issues from now. We have already, I think we may have mentioned this before, our 300th issue is mere 99 issues away. This is Sparta!
That's already plotted.
Yeah, 99 issues from now, if you stick with us, we're going to be talking about 300, because it buys time for me to buy a copy and actually know something more than the movie. And in the final word for tonight, I want to officially say, as a comic collector, as a Star Wars comic toy fan, as somebody who loves conventions, who's silly for fandom, I want to officially declare the Tanzanite, which apparently became the new November birthstone a few years back, the first change since like 1920 some odd in the official birthstone list. Let's declare Tanzanite as the official gemstone of fandom. So when you're considering jewelry and other accoutrements, that think Tanzanite.
There you go. Good night, everybody. Think Tanzanite. That's the
hashtag think Tan.
That's for the next 100 issues. Hashtag think Tanzanite. We'll see y'all next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Y'all are amazing. Say good night, Cole.
This is Hey Kids Comics.